Well, good morning everyone and welcome to Essex Church, where this community known as Kensington Unitarians meets each week. Well done for getting here on this grey and soggy morning. Our community is created by all those who walk through our doors. Welcome to those who are new to this place or to Unitarian worship. There'll be an opportunity later in the service if you wish to introduce yourselves. Welcome to those of you who are here most weeks, those of you who consider this community your spiritual home. For those of you who don't know me already, my name's Jane Blackall. I've been part of this congregation for 11 and a half years-ish, and nowadays I also work here part-time as outreach officer. Our minister, Sarah Tinker, is away this weekend, having a well-earned weekend off, so I'll be leading the service this morning. We enter into this time and place to join our hearts and minds together. What is it that we come here seeking? Many things, too many to mention them all. Yet it's likely that some common longings draw us to be with one another. To remember what's most important in life, to be challenged to live more truly, more deeply, to live with integrity and kindness and with hope and love. To feel the company of those who seek a common path, to be renewed in our faith in the promise of this life, to be strengthened and to find the courage to do what we must do day after day. Even if your longings are different than these, you're welcome here. You're welcome in your grief and your joy to be within this circle of companions. We gather here. It's good to be together. Let's start by lighting our chalice, the symbol of our worldwide Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist community. We light this chalice for all who are here and all who are not, for all who have ever walked through our doors, for those who may yet find this spiritual home, and for those we can't yet imagine. For each of us and for us all, may this flame burn warm and bright. I invite you now to join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and of love, in this season of gathering in and remembrance, we remember in gratitude all those who came before us to prepare the paths which we now tread. We remember in love our family members, friends and lovers who, though not with us today, still guide our footsteps. We remember in awe the miracles of daily life which inspire us and raise our spirits. We remember in joy the love divine and human which surrounds us always. We remember in peace the divine light within us all, which brings the strength for growth. We remember in acceptance our task of sharing that inner light with all around us, wherever we go. Amen.
Did someone say that there would be an end? An end, oh, an end to love and mourning. Such voices speak when sleep and waking blend, the cold, bleak voices of the early morning, when all the birds are dumb in dark November. Remember and forget, forget and remember. After the false night, warm true voices wake. Voice of the dead that touches the cold living. Through the pale sunlight, once more gravely speak. Tell me again while the last leaves are falling. Dear child, what has been once so interwoven cannot be ravelled, nor the gift ungiven. Now the dead move through all of us, still glowing. Mother and child, lover and lover mated, are wound and bound together and enflowing. What has been plaited cannot be unplaited. Only the strands grow richer with each loss, and memory makes kings and queens of us. Dark into light, light into darkness spin. When all the birds have flown to some real haven, we who find shelter in the warmth within, listen and feel new cherished, new forgiven. As the lost human voices speak through us and blend our complex love, our mourning without end. That's All Souls by May Sutton.
This is a meditation by Victoria Safford. It's very clearly meant to be read aloud. It's called Immortal Invisible. Where do they go, do you think, when they die? Our mothers and brothers and lovers, colleagues, children and friends. You turn your head and suddenly they have slipped away. But where? What's happened? What remains? I find myself telling a young child things I didn't know I believe about death. Things that shock me, make me wonder. We come across a small dead turtle in the road and we decide to bury it. So with a stick, we scrape a space on the edge of someone else's grass and put the little disc of a shell in the hollow of the earth. And I tell what will happen to the turtle, to the muscle and the blood and the eyes. And the shell. He loves this. It all goes back to the earth, I say, into new soil, and new plants will use it and grow, and birds will eat the plants, or we will, and the birds will scatter seeds which turtles might eat. Round and round and round it goes. This much I know is true. But I also say, because the child is clearly waiting to hear more. Clearly he knows that this cannot be all. And the spirit of the turtle comes out and goes back into everything, into the stars and the sun and you and me. Everything the turtle was returns to everything and it is not lost. We're both a little shocked at that, and pondering as we continue walking. That same child was told not long ago by a well-meaning relative that her dead cat, the relative's dead cat, is now happy in kitty heaven. And the fact is, though I roll my supercilious eyes and make derisive noises, I don't now know, and never will, whether kitty heaven is real, or kitty hell for that matter. The child and I, and all the poets and philosophers, the scientists and scholars, are equal in our ignorance on this, and equal in our expertise when someone asks, what will happen to the turtle? Or to us? Bowel and blood and bone change into other things, dust and drop and molecule. But what about the soul? The heart is water and flesh. It decomposes fast or burns. But what of the heart's contents? What we know for sure when someone dies is loneliness. What we know is the lifelong struggle to remember. What we know beyond biology and chemistry. What we know forever and ever are the questions. What remains of him, of her? What remains of you, in me?
As Anthony mentioned earlier, in the world outside these walls, Halloween's getting top billing and all the attention at the moment. But for the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to put all the pumpkins to one side and take our cue from the actual pagan and Christian festivals that are coming up over the next few days. For pagans, today is Samhain. In the old Celtic traditions, this was apparently considered to be the time of year when the veils between this world and the other world were at their thinnest, when the spirits of the dead could mingle more freely with the living. In the Christian church calendar, tomorrow, 1st of November, is All Saints' Day, the day when Christians are called to celebrate the lives of all the saints and martyrs who aren't high profile enough to have a day all to themselves. The day after, All Souls, is when the mainstream church remember the faithful departed and pray for the souls of those in purgatory. To take a liberal religious track, though, and make it our own, I'm going to quote UU Minister Carl Seaberg, who puts it like this. All Souls Day is set apart in many churches for the commemoration of those holy souls who have graced our lives and passed from the living circle. Their radiance, their works, their memories are still with us. On this day we meet to celebrate them fondly and thoughtfully too, remembering that we also shall someday follow where they went. These words from Carl Seaberg put me more in mind of the Day of the Dead, as celebrated in Mexico, where, as I understand it, whole families will go and visit a grave and take picnics and decorations. And as well as the sorrow of loss, there's something of a joyful remembering about it all, a sense that the loved ones are still very much amongst us, included in the ongoing circle of community. So my hope is that this sermon will have that kind of tone, honouring and celebrating the lives of those we've lost. At the same time, I don't want to simply brush aside the pain and despair we feel when a loved one dies. It may well be that one or more people present here today are recently bereaved and are right in the middle of the raw grief. If that's the case for you today, I hope that we can gently hold you in the warmth of this community during your sorrow. It occurs to me that there may also be some present today who haven't ever experienced the death of anyone they were particularly close to. As yet. Just over 2 years ago, I was in that position myself. In October 2008, Michaela and Sarah were running a course here on issues around death and dying. I clearly remember coming along to one of those sessions and saying that I had no particular fear of my own death, but that the thought of losing a loved one was utterly unbearable, and reflecting on the fact that up to that point, I'd never known the death of anyone I'd been close to. As some of you know, within a week of that conversation, my beloved friend Simon John Barlow died suddenly without warning. He was out shopping, he collapsed, and he never regained consciousness. He'd been the absolute centre of my life for 5 years. I thought we'd grow old together. And then he was gone. It was with Simon John in mind that I particularly wanted to lead the service on this theme today, and you may have noticed that we used one of his prayers earlier. I wanted him to be included in some way. At this point, I want to own up to a certain cowardliness. I made a conscious decision not to wrangle with any of the usual questions of the afterlife in this sermon. All I'd like to say on that matter is to offer a few words from Forest Church, a much-loved UU minister, theologian and author, who himself died just over a year ago. He says, "Whatever happens to us after we die, life doesn't end in oblivion. It continues in love, our own love, once given, everlasting. After death, our bodies may be resurrected, our souls may transmigrate or become part of the heavenly pleroma. We may join our loved ones in heaven, or we may return the constituent parts of our being to the earth from which it came and rest in eternal peace. About life after death, no one knows. But about love after death, we surely know. The one thing that can never be taken from this world, even by death, is the love we have given away before we die. Love, I swear it, is immortal." In those words from Forest Church are echoes of the message from the poem that Joe read for us earlier. Dear child, what has been once so interwoven cannot be ravelled or the gift ungiven. And it also echoes the silent verses on the front of your order of service from Henri Nouwen. You have to trust that every true friendship has no end. Those you have loved deeply and who have died live on in you. That's at the heart of what I want to say today. Each time we deeply connect with another, truly meet a friend or lover at soul level, we're changed by the encounter. We learn and we grow, and this process doesn't end even after the loved one has died. Of course, it's not all starlight and roses. In any true, authentic relationship, there's bound to be an element of tussle and grit. We're challenged by each other, we move apart and come together again. Our worldviews are shifted and hopefully enlarged by the encounter. All this is in the very nature of letting down our defences and being real with each other. Of course, I hope there's joy too, pure delight in each other's company, the unique, beautiful manifestation of the divine spark that we've recognised and met in another. But any real world relationship is bound to contain light and shade, and I'll say it again, this doesn't end with death. Here are some words from another UU minister, Victoria Weinstein, on the matter. There's no need for us to end our relationship with our dead, for they are still ours. Still ours to struggle with, to learn from, and to love. There's no timeline for grieving them and no finitude to loving them. Through time, as long a time as it takes, we take their dreams and their desires and their issues and integrate them into our own. We make use of whatever hard-won wisdom they were lucky enough to have gained while they lived. We continue to forgive them if forgiveness is called for. We continue the work of their hands. So says Victoria Weinstein. So for me, that's what we're called to do on All Souls Day, to cherish and keep alive the gifts we've been given by our loved ones. We may have memories, mementos, photographs, and if we're lucky, our loved ones might have left behind something they've created, maybe writing or art, in which they've expressed something of themselves, their wisdom, their message for the world. But whether or not these artifacts remain, we who have truly known and loved them can carry something of their spirit onwards. We might take on particular projects in their name as a memorial, or we may simply let their influence continue to guide our steps in more subtle ways. The other side of All Souls Day, of course, is to bring into awareness the prospect of our own ending. One day it will be our time to go. What will we leave behind in our turn? People who have had a brush with a life-threatening illness often speak of how it's focused their mind. They resolve to live and love without holding back, do whatever good they can while there's still time, to create and express themselves and share whatever wisdom they've gained. To live more boldly so they don't die regretting the things unsaid or undone. But we don't have to have been to the brink ourselves to try and live this way. Reflecting on death and loss, as we're called to do on All Souls, can remind us to live more deeply now. As this sermon comes to an end, let's remember the lives of those who've given us inspiration, strength, comfort and love. Let's give thanks for those whose presence is always with us and honour their memory with a small ceremony of remembrance. I invite you to come and light a candle, or several if you wish, to remember beloved friends and family who have died, or maybe people who have touched your life through their work, inspirational figures from across the generations. With a view to the time, I ask you to simply come up and name the person you're remembering, and then just leave a couple of seconds silence, and then we'll move on. All of these holy souls live on in us. To close our small ceremony of remembrance, I'd like to offer some words from the minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C., Robert Hardies. Every year, All Souls Day affords us the opportunity to remember the dead, and to remember also that one day we will join them. That one day people will sit in this very sanctuary, or perhaps another, and call out our names. In death, all borders are erased, and our souls return to that one soul from which we have all come. This is death's lesson, that what unites us is far greater than what divides us. The great challenge for us is not to wait until death is knocking on our own door to discover this, but to see it now. And with that vision, to live into the promise of the great family of all souls. Amen.